Hi.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything is fine. Hey, everybody. Everything's fine.
Hey,
everything's fine. Relax. Everything
live from the 215. I am Kyle Pagan, joined as always by my man Mark Henry. We've got a great episode for you. We've got Brendan Deeg. He is a writer at Pro Football Network, also the host of the Double Doink podcast. We're breaking down Eagles Chargers, a couple best bets, gambling lines from this weekend. Can they beat Justin Herbert? Is Shane Steichen a mole? But before we get into that, let's talk about Tap Room. Now, Mark, we talk about Tap Room every podcast. Do you ever pay for GoPuff? Those fees?
All the time.
All the time. They're insane.
Insane.
The thing is, for Tap Room, you're very convincing. You don't have to pay those fees because they're a great beer delivery service. So you want to get drunk with the boys on Saturday. You want to get drunk with the fellows on Sunday. You want to get drunk with the ladies on Friday. You get Tap Room. pa.taproom.com. Get a couple cases. Hard to find beers. Hard to find seltzers. Hard to find kombuchas. Spiked kombuchas, which is a new thing to me. That's probably my favorite thing from this. I'll never get them, but people out there love them. It's a $1 billion industry for a reason. With promo code FINE50, over $100 or more order, you can get $50 off. It's a no-brainer. If you're having a party, if I don't know how we do with the college demographic, but like if you're having a party, like this is a no-brainer. $50 in college is like $50 million in real life. So go to pa.taproom.com. Whether you're in the city of Philadelphia, whether you're outside the state, you get hard to find beers, hard to find seltzers, hard to find kombucha. Mark, great interview with Brendan Deeg. 1, 2, 3. What was your favorite part? Put you on the spot.
Oh, when he disagreed with you about Patrick Mahomes, 100%.
All right. Well, let's get over to Brendan Deeg. It's the contract. It's not a discount. All right. Let's get over to Brendan Deeg. It's not a discount contract anymore. All right, coming to you live from the Great White North, we have the Sixth God, Brendan Deeg, on right now to talk, to break down some Chargers, some Eagles. Brendan, how you doing all the way up there in Toronto?
I'm doing well. It's been a crazy last few days in the NFL, like just in general with news around Odell, of course, Henry Ruggs, Aaron Rodgers. So it's been a lot the last couple of days, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's been absolutely wild.
Yeah.
Have you guys gotten the first snowfall up in Toronto yet?
We have not yet. It's getting cold though. I'm starting to get the winter coat out. I'm not too happy about it. One, Canada's a beautiful place, beautiful country, but it sucks from November till about February. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's like 47 down here right now in the early November, and that's crazy for us. How? So you're an Eagles writer, obviously, but how the Argonauts doing? How the old Doug Flutie Argonauts?
So I actually have season tickets to the Argos. I've only been once. Looks like we just clinched a playoff spot last week. My parents actually were at the game. I'm still doing okay. It's been exciting. I know there's a ton of football down in America, but if anyone ever gets a chance to check out some CFL football, it is exciting. I played football at York University, so a lot of guys that I played with are now in the CFL. So,
oh, sweet. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's get into the Eagles Chargers. That's why people came here. It's not complicated. The Eagles game plan should be run the damn ball against the worst rushing defense in the league. Obviously, they can't do that 70 times. So what do they have to do, you think, in the passing game to keep the Chargers D maybe on their toes?
Well, the Chargers are not good in the middle of the field. I know Derwin James is a solid safety, but their linebackers are banged up and they're not very talented. So I think, look, it seems like the Eagles offense has been kind of tailored around Dallas Goedert the last couple games. Like, it looks like that's who they're kind of making passing plays for. Devonta Smith has been kind of an afterthought in the passing game. So I'd say attacking the middle of the field with Dallas Goedert would be one. I really like the game plan that they had against the Lions. I know it was a ton of running, but like if they can integrate a little more of that passing even to the play action behind it, that would be good. But you kind of nailed it. They better come out with a similar game plan like they did against Detroit with running the football. Like the Chargers run defense is bad, and it's bad by a mile. Like they're the worst running team in run defense in the NFL, and it's not even close. That's kind of by design too. It's not really just because they're bad. They're just because they don't have the talent there. Brandon Staley, the defense or the head coach now of the Chargers. That's the defense he wants to run. He wants you to beat you through the run, and then you have to try and pass on him, and you make a mistake at some point. That's kind of the style of defense that Gannon's almost implemented the same kind of defense that Staley has. So it's by design, but they're weak at it. So I would say, I don't know if I don't really know what they're doing with the running back committee. Like, it's hard to say who's going to be the focal point. Like, I had no idea Boston Scott and Jordan Howard were going to be the two guys. I don't think anybody did. I think a lot of people lost fantasy matchups by starting Kenneth Gainwell this week. So I would say kind of rotate those three guys similar as last week. But running the football is going to be key, and then play action pass behind it.
I would say going off that, the run defense, I mean, you saw it a couple of weeks ago with the Chargers when they played the Ravens, when the Ravens absolutely routed them. That was a game that a lot of people liked the Chargers to win. Ravens won 34-6 because they dominated on the ground. Obviously, we don't have Lamar Jackson, but Jalen Hurts is his own type of threat at the quarterback position for running. So, and going off of what you just said about the running back by committee, like you said, people are upset nationally about Gainwell in the fantasy community, that Kyle always rolls his eyes at me for talking about. But I think that people might be overreacting a little bit. Kenneth Gainwell did still get 13 carries. So I know that it was like kind of spread out throughout the game, but he didn't get much going. Maybe this is a different game. Maybe he gets more going against the Chargers. I think people are kind of writing him off a little bit. What do you think about that? I know you just said you don't really know what to expect. Obviously, Jordan Howard got way more work than any of us expect. But I guess for the fantasy heads out there, how would you rank the three for this week?
Well, I'm assuming Gainwell's probably still number one. It's tough to say. I was a huge Gainwell guy coming out of college this year. I was really happy when they drafted him. He's explosive. He's really exciting in the passing game. And I'm assuming they still think that. Like, I don't think they're just going to completely cut him out of the offense. You are right. He did have 13 touches. A lot of it was towards the end. A lot of the carries were Boston Scott up in Jordan Howard. I will say this. I know this. The offensive staff, Shane Steichen and Nick Sirianni, they weren't too pleased with how Miles Sanders was running on first down. Like, if you kind of look back at it, Miles Sanders didn't have a lot of like 4 or 5 yard gains on first down. It was a lot of, okay, we're getting a 1st and 10, or we're 2nd and 11, or 2nd and 10, 2nd and 9, and that was holding this offense back. Boston Scott and Jordan Howard only combined for one run that was under 2nd and 10 the next down. So they were always getting at least 3 to 4 yards every single run. And that was crucial in this game. It's crucial for this offense. It makes Jalen Hurts easier to play quarterback. He doesn't have to always be in long distances. So I think they liked that style. Like, even I passed the eye test. If you just watch Boston Scott and Jordan Howard, they're always hitting the hole fast. They're not kind of standing behind the line of scrimmage and waiting for old Miles Sanders. Is a very boomer bust running back. Talented guy, and I'm not taking anything away from him, but it seemed like the coaching staff was a little frustrated with how he wasn't getting production on first down. So that's why the transition of Boston Scott and Jordan Howard. But in this game, I honestly, I couldn't give you a read. I think they're going to rotate those three guys. I wouldn't start any of them in fantasy if I had a choice. Maybe Jordan Howard, because he's a goal line guy. I'm assuming he'll get like the goal line touches, but that's basically it.
What's the matchup you're most interested in this weekend?
I'm seeing this, our DBs versus their wide receivers. So if you take a look at how the Chargers have lost last 2 weeks, they've completely shut down Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. They were invisible last week against the Patriots. Bill Belichick was able to completely take them out of the game. They were not getting open at all. I was watching that game. I'm like, the Chargers need another wide receiver. But then you think about it, they have Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, who are really good wide receivers. Those two were completely not a non-factor. And Eagles defensive backs have been playing well this year. They've been playing a lot of zones, so it's kind of hard to get a read on how their man-to-man stats are. But take those two guys out, make them beat you another way, and you should have success. That's exactly what Bill Belichick did last week, exactly what Baltimore did the week before that. So I think that's going to be important.
Are you a Birds fan?
I am. Yeah.
Oh, Eagles fan. Okay. Have you been down to like any games at home?
I was actually at the home opener this year. I was at the 49ers game, yeah.
So you understand how they get after it at the tailgate and everything.
Yes. I was in there. Yeah, I was in that scrum.
So the line is 2.5, -2.5 Chargers right now. Do you think Vegas has built in? Oh, it's going down. Where's it at now?
I saw it around 1.5 this morning.
Ooh. It was at one yesterday.
So do you think the Vegas is building in the fact that now Eagles fans have 8 hours to tailgate? It's a 4 or 5 game.
That's a good point. I don't know. I honestly, so I'm looking at FanDuel right now, and it's two. My Chargers are 2-point favorites right now. I think it should be around 3.5, 4. I don't really look. I know the Eagles did route the Lions last week, but if you if we look at it in like a three game vacuum, the Eagles are 1-2. They got smoked by the Bucs. They got smoked by the Raiders. So, like, I know they've smoked the line. Like, they've been a funny team. Like, they're not a lot of close games. If they win big, they win big. If they lose big, they lose big. It's been kind of a weird start. So, yeah, I think the crowd's going to be rocking. Like, and I was – if they lost to the Lions, I was thinking, like, that crowd would have been nuts. A lot of Fire Howie chants going on. I'm sure there might still be some Fire Howie chants going on. But, yeah, the crowd's definitely going to be involved. When it comes to spread, I'm surprised it's sitting around two. I thought it would be around 3.5, 4.
Yeah, Kyle stole my question there. I saw you were a gambling guy on Twitter, so I was going to ask you what you thought about the spread. Yeah, it's a little too low for me. I would put it up around 4, like you said. I won't be touching it. I can't bet against the Eagles. It's my one weakness as a gambler. I'd say, well, many weaknesses, but that's my
bet with your bet with your head, not with your heart.
You got to. I know, but I can't bet against them. So I won't bet on them every game. You know, it's one of those situations. But
so, what do you guys then have? Do you have any props or any time touchdowns that you like, Mark?
I have not dove into my anytime. I do anytime touchdown articles for the National Football Post every week. I've not dove into it yet. Like, I just finished up Thursday Night Football 2 days ago. I'm diving into Packers versus Packers versus Chiefs right now. I have my Cardinals versus 49ers up. So anytime touchdowns are not all up yet. So I don't have any bets. But Eagles have been a really hard team to gauge for touchdowns this year. Like, the only one I think I've hit was Zach Ertz against the Bucks on Sunday night. The last game of his Eagles career. They've been a tough team. Like, last week, for instance, like, Kenneth Gainwell was like -155 to score a touchdown. It didn't happen, right? Like, so even sports books are having a tough time gauging this team.
Hertz has been decent on anytime touchdown scores. They've taken the juice out a little bit since the beginning of the year. It was higher and maybe around the +200. It's kind of come around +130 now. But I mean, I don't know if Kyle's getting this podcast out on Thursday, but if you do, Ty Johnson over 20.5 receiving yards. He's had 22, 65, and 71 the last 3 weeks. Mike White loves throwing to this guy. Mm-hmm. They could be behind too, so they should be throwing Ty Johnson over 20.5. I wasn't going to give that pick out, but you might as well throw it out there. Is there any picks you see already on the board for this weekend outside of Eagles Chargers that you like?
I am right now. I'm waiting on Kyler Murray's injury status, but I'm not high in the 49ers this year. I don't really get why sportsbooks are giving them a lot of love. I know they kind of had a big win last week against the Bears, but I wrote last week, like, if Kyler Murray's playing, and it looks like he is, like, the Cardinals are only 1-point favorites right now. I think guys should be running and hitting that line quickly. The 49ers are just not, in my opinion, a very good football team. The Cardinals are 6-1, and they're only 1-point favorites. It doesn't make any sense to me. The 49ers are 1-11 in their last 12 games at home. They can't win at home for some reason. So I really like that one. I'm doing my Packers Chiefs article right now. I really like the Packers +7.5. I know Rodgers is out. Chiefs are like 3-16 in their last 19 games against the spread. Like, they don't cover big spreads. They always keep getting these big, like, 7 to 10 point spreads, and they never hit. When they do win, they're not winning big right now. So I like that one as well. But that's as far as I've got right now. I'm more of a prop guy. I do two articles a week for the Post, and then I do my anytime touchdown article. So that's it.
I love that cards bet. The Packers bet, I see your logic. I would not be touching the Chiefs, especially with Jordan Love being such an unknown variable. But I'm sure Kyle's
still a first round pick, and he still's got talent. Like, I don't, if they lose, I just, they're probably going to lose the game. I just don't see them losing by more than a touchdown.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Sure.
Are you a Mahomes or Rodgers guy?
I think Mahomes. So on my podcast yesterday, I put him as the most disappointing player through 8 weeks, and it's tough. I was laughing at myself because, like, he hasn't been bad, but he's been bad to Mahomes' standards. Like, we put him at such a high standard, so I couldn't find another guy to put there. I took the Green Bay Packers to win the Super Bowl before the year. I'm sticking with it. I think they're the best, most complete football team in the NFL. They have been the last 3 years. 33-7 over the last 3 years is an incredible record. Matt LaFleur should be coach of the year as of right now. I know they've got a lot of drama going on, but it will pass by after this week. It's not, if they lose to the Chiefs, it's not the end of the world. I think the Packers are going to win Super Bowl. I'm sticking with it.
Do you think the contract that Pat Mahomes signed, do you think it's still a discount?
It was funny. What was that one? There was a tweet going around when he had like a 2-interception game where someone was like, they still owe him all this money. It was like this contract guy. It's like, all right, let's take a deep breath here. It's been a couple games. I think the contract was fine. I also think that it was the right thing to do for the Kansas City Chiefs side. If I was Mahomes, I would have waited a little bit. I think he left a lot of money on the table. I think he's pretty much going to get a blank check. I think we'll be fine. It's just, it's a tough stretch. Like, I predicted the Chiefs were going to kind of fall back a little bit this year when our, on our preseason show on my podcast. And I said that because it's so hard to go to four straight AFC title games. It's not easy. Like, football, it's so hard to win in the NFL. They've been to three in a row, two Super Bowls the last 3 years. Like, people forget that. And when as a team, like, since the early 2000 Patriots have done something like this, it doesn't happen very often. So they were bound for a step back. I didn't think they would take this much of a step back. I still think they're going to make the playoffs, but yeah, they're an interesting team down the stretch here to see if they can get it figured out.
Just so you know, Kyle has so much hate in his heart for Patrick Mahomes. It's actually one of the most unbelievable.
Please explain this. I need to hear why.
No, it's insane. It's insane. I can't even defend this man.
He gets shoved down my throat, and sometimes I'm just tired of it.
Loves Aaron Rodgers, though.
The NFL marketing machine. Yeah, the Aaron Rodgers hit, let's be honest, the PR is not the greatest right now, but we'll get through it. Yeah. He said he was immunized. Was he immunized from vaccination? Obviously not, but is he immunized from his weird
sneaky
crystal doctor?
Sneaky guy, with that immunized comment. Like, fooled everybody. It fooled Rappaport, fooled Schefter. Nobody knew. Nobody had any clue. Okay, question. So you hate Mahomes. Is it more of his family you don't like, or is it Pat you don't like?
So you know what? If Jackson Mahomes dances in front of a Quest Diagnostics this weekend, I'm back in on Jackson Mahomes. But yeah, it's kind of like his family thing, his mom thing. He throws like one pass and he's not looking. Matt Stafford does it all the time. Matt Stafford doesn't get the kind of pub that Patrick Mahomes
didn't
gets
go
and whatnot.
To three straight AFC championship games and two straight Super Bowls.
He was on a perennial loser. Look at him now. At him now. He looks good now.
Win the Super Bowl. I think he's
I hope
Super
he does.
I agree with the one-handed throws and stuff like that. It's so overrated. Like, it happens all the time. But I agree. The Holmes family stuff is insane. Like, I don't get how he deals with it. I really don't.
Yeah. This year he's Carson Wentz with the Jerry curl.
By the way, I have to get this takeout about Aaron Rodgers since me and Kyle didn't talk about it last podcast. And all off season, I tried to tell people the whole Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay thing was a Shailene Woodley doesn't want to live in Wisconsin thing. He can say it's about cutting Jake Kumerow, and he can say it's about, you know, drafting Jordan Love and being upset with Gutekunst. I think it probably has more to do with Shailene Woodley. And I think this whole immunized thing probably has more to do with Shailene Woodley than anything when you see the articles coming out about her eating clay and stuff like that. So I don't know. I just had to get that take out there. But going back to the Eagles, I don't know how we go back there. I kind of feel like the X factor in this game. I know you talked about Keenan Allen and Mike Williams going against the DBs. I don't see how we stop Austin Eckler in this game if they use him to like the normal degree that they use him in the passing game. I just don't know who's going to cover Austin Eckler on this team. I don't know if you have an idea of who's going to do that.
Well, it sounds like Davion Taylor and T.J. Edwards are going to get the bulk of the linebacker play throughout the rest of the year. That's what Sirianni kind of said in the interview. And then both, I think T.J. Edwards played the most snaps of any linebacker. I'd have to double check that. But it seems like those two guys are going forward. And I think that's fine. I think that's the way it should be. They're the two youngest guys, want to get them some reps. We have to finally see what Davion Taylor is made of. He was a third round pick. We barely have any like data on him. I'm fine with letting Austin Eckler beat us. If that's how they win, then that's how they win. I'd rather that than Keenan Allen or Mike Williams. I think, and that's what Jonathan Gannon's probably thinking as well. I think like you would rather a guy like Eckler beat you than you get beat deep by Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. And that's kind of the style of defense, again, that Staley and Gannon want to implement. Let the running back beat you on dump offs and then just don't get beat deep. I know the Eagles were doing it to a crazy extent where their safety was basically in the end zone on every play, and they were playing so far deep. I think they toned it down a little bit last week. But, I think he's probably going to have a big game. Like, again, everyone's predicting DeAndre Swift was going to have a massive game against us. And that's right. And going forward, running backs are going to be kind of the key guy to watch against the Eagles. But, again, I would rather them beat us that way than over the top.
How do we account for Shane Steichen potentially being a mole?
That's a good point. And Sirianni, right? A lot of Chargers guys in that building. It's hard to get a read on Steichen and what he really brings to this offense. I don't really. It's hard to kind of get a read on this coaching staff and figure out who's calling what, who's doing this. I think a lot of the screen game so far has been Steichen. I know he's a big screen guy, so I think a lot of that implemented in the offense is him. But yeah, you make a good point. A lot of these guys are kind of playing against their alma mater, I guess.
So I guess let's go. I'm going to make it a little bigger picture with the Eagles here. I can tell by your tweets that you're not. I think you align with me more than Kyle here, that you're not a big Howie Roseman guy. I think that that's the correct opinion. Now, Kyle,
I don't want to be labeled as Kyle a big Howie Roseman guy.
Kyle goes with the wind on Howie Roseman, but yeah. I would say, like, last week, I think that there was a lot of chatter that, wow, if this season goes under, maybe this is a whole clean sweep. You get rid of Howie, Sirianni, Hurts. I kind of always said Howie's a survivor, and we talked about that last week, that Howie won't get fired for as long as Jeffrey Lurie is as involved with the team as he is, in my opinion. I guess I would ask you right now, sitting where you are, what's the percentage chance that Howie Roseman's the GM next year?
95% to 90%, unless it completely falls off a cliff. I thought last week's game was really important for Howie's future. If they lost that one, like, then I thought, like, okay, then the tires would start turning. You might see something. Look, I've been really frustrated with what Howie's done the last two, maybe I'll go 18 to 24 months. That's what's kind of pissed me off. It hasn't been the 2018, 2019. They were derailed by injuries in those years. Nick Foles kind of dragged us to the playoffs. Carson Wentz did. They were throwing to, like, J.J. Wentz was throwing to J.J. Ortega, Whiteside, like Robert Davis, like guys that you've never even heard of. So it was the 2020 year and this year that have really kind of pissed me off with Howie. The main reason is he's supposed to be this cap guy, okay? He's supposed to be the guy that's supposed to control the cap. He's supposed to be a money guy. And why I was kind of outraged on Twitter was this Fletcher Cox stuff going on yesterday. And it made absolutely no sense for Fletcher Cox to be in any sort of trade conversation right now. If you were to trade him, you'd be paying about a $22 million cap hit next year and a $12 million cap hit this year. That's another $34 million cap hit. And why? For what? So we can get like a second round pick from – no one was paying a second round pick for Fletcher Cox anyways. It made no sense. So we would have got maybe a third or fourth. You're buying a third and fourth round pick for $34 million. Like, what are we doing here? And it's just – it goes to show this organization that has no plan going forward. They restructured Fletcher Cox back in early September. So I don't think when they restructured him that they were planning on trading him, right? Like, what changed? Like, why? It doesn't seem like there's a full plan ahead with Howie Roseman. It just seems like he's going off day by day in the NFL. And that's not the way you run a successful organization. For example, they restructured Fletcher Cox, okay? The reason they did that is because they needed Zach Ertz on the books, because Zach Ertz was not supposed to be here and from the beginning. He was supposed to be traded at some point. It didn't happen, okay? We have to free up $8.5 million. So we do that. We free up $8.5 million from Fletcher Cox's contract. Then you trade Zach Ertz, okay? And then you have Fletcher Cox is restructured, and now you have all this cap space for what? For no reason. And now you're going to go ruin that by getting a third-round pick? It just – The whole his plan from the beginning of 2020 till now has not made a lot of sense. There's been Deshaun Watson rumors. Like, there doesn't seem to be a straightforward plan here. And when Sirianni was hired, we kind of had some juice there. Like, okay, we have a new coaching staff. Maybe we can get some young innovative minds in here. And it didn't look like that off the bat. And it still doesn't. Like, I'm not going to put a lot of weight on the Lions game. We'll see how he does in the next 2 weeks. But there doesn't seem to be a full-blown direction of what we're doing, where this organization is going from top to bottom. And it starts with Howie. He is the guy making all these changes. So that's why I've been frustrated with him. But I'm not the guy saying we should have fired Howie 3 years ago. It's been more of the last 12 months that I've been kind of on this train.
I will say, Kyle, I labeled him a Howie guy a minute ago, but he did nail that same exact Cox point the other day. So you guys are aligned there.
Mm-hmm. So let's throw some more fire, some more oil on the fire. Mr. Unlimited. Russell Wilson, 3 first round picks. You talk about no plan. That kind of seems like an organization with no plan. Hey, we're going to take these 3 picks, which I'm okay with it. I'm actually a pro go get Russell Wilson guy. But that kind of goes to your point where it's like, hey, there's no plan. Let's get the franchise quarterback and figure it out later. That's basically what I feel like is the plan.
Yeah, that's fine in a nutshell, but it seems like they're kind of just jumping on that plan now. Like, they drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. Okay, so you don't take a quarterback in the second round unless you expect him to start. I hated the whole, oh, he's going to be a backup. No, you don't draft second round quarterbacks to be backups. It doesn't make any sense. The reason he drafted Jalen Hurts is because he missed out on Russell Wilson 9 years ago now. Howie Roseman is in love with Russell Wilson. He probably has a picture of him in his office. He probably thinks about missing on him all the time. He's his favorite player in the NFL. And so I have a theory that the reason they drafted Jalen Hurts is because they didn't want to miss out on another Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And then not missing on another Russell Wilson, like, tanked the whole year. Like, I don't know if the reason why Carson Wentz was bad was because of Hurts, but it potentially could be. There's definitely something to that. The whole 2020 plan never made any sense, and the whole building was not a cohesive unit. So the Russell Wilson side of things, Yeah, if he's available, like, I would be all for it. It depends on exactly what you're giving up and what your plan is to build around him. And also, I'm assuming Russell Wilson's going to be able to pick where he wants to go if he does want to go somewhere. And I don't know if he exactly wants to come to Philly.
Close to New York.
That's true.
The one thing I'll say about Russell Wilson.
The Giants are a team to watch, Wilson. Like, I've been saying that. Like, they've got some ammo. They have a first-round pick from the Bears this year. They have a quarterback. Daniel Jones can go to Seattle, right? They have a guy they can trade with him. I'm assuming Seattle's going to want at least some sort of stopgap quarterback to take on. So that's the team I would watch for Russell Wilson. Unfortunately, we might have to be playing him twice a year.
I think the reason Howie partially loves Russell Wilson besides the draft is the fact that Russell Wilson is 7-0 against us lifetime.
He kills us. Yeah, Seattle always kills us.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I would say this is an Eagles-related question, but it shifts to the Dolphins here. Big game this week for the Dolphins pick that we own. So the Texans are going to Miami. They just announced it actually like 2 minutes ago that Tyrod Taylor is expected to start. That line was at 7.5. It's around 6.5 now. Do you think the Texans have a chance to win that game and help us out?
With Tyrod Taylor on the field, they're a better team than Miami Dolphins, in my opinion.
I agree.
Like, I took the Colts in Survivor tonight, and I'm really, really worried. I was actually debating on taking the Dolphins if Tyrod Taylor didn't start, but that makes such a big swing. Tyrod Taylor was balling out before he got hurt at the beginning of the year. He was playing really well. He's a top 20 quarterback, 25 quarterback in the NFL. So I think him on the Texans roster and playing, they are better than Miami, and I wouldn't be shocked if they beat them.
Sean Jackson, what was your thought process on that tweet?
Okay. I didn't expect it to kind of go crazy like that. Why I don't think it wasn't maybe just pinpointed to Sean Jackson. I just want a veteran wide receiver in this room. Deshaun Jackson may not be the guy. I have a thing for that guy. He's one of my favorite players growing up. And whenever he's free, I'm always like, maybe he'll be back in Philly. But yeah, I probably shouldn't have put that out. I was getting shredded yesterday on Twitter in the comments. I had to mute my notifications. But yeah, it was more, I just think they need a veteran guy in the wide receiver room. And so they have Jalen Reagor, Kez Watkins, and Devonta Smith. No other. Like, and then you add a veteran, that's four guys. No one else should be seeing the field. Like, I'm sick and tired of seeing Greg Ward on the field, sick and tired of seeing J.J. Arcega-Whiteside on the field. There's no use to them anymore. We know what they are. There's no point. They're not very talented. When they're on the field, they're the worst football player on the field. So I just think Deshaun Jackson wouldn't be the worst idea in the world to bring him back if he's healthy. But again, it's more of just tailored to a veteran wide receiver in the room. And I think they're missing it greatly.
I'm in on it. I'm yeah. all in. I saw the next tweet. The next tweet was that you like chaos. Kyle, you can't back that up. Kyle's the biggest agent of chaos I know. This is three agents of chaos right here. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Exactly. Yeah, it was more of just like – it would be kind of interesting. It would bring some juice to this team, you know, bring some juice to the offense. And again, I know like he basically stole money from his organization 2 years prior. He barely played. But he wouldn't be very expensive. He'd be cheap. And again, it would bring some chaos.
But when he did play, it was so fun. There's a couple moments where they were electric.
2019, it's the first week of 2019, right, against the Washington. He had those two T-bombs. And then that was all she wrote, basically.
And if he doesn't get reps, he might legitimately fight Sirianni or Steichen after, like, he demanded out. True. He demanded out in, like, 6 weeks from, like, a 7-1 team. Like, they're, like, going to be an NFC contender. And he's like, nope, not enough reps for me.
Yeah.
I think he would fight Sirianni. Just blank.
That's funny.
Before we get you out of here, OBJ, what do you think about that?
I'd have a hard time believing he'd be coming to Philly. I think the Saints make a lot of sense. I'm having a hard time reading the situation. I said on my podcast yesterday, I think there's two scenarios here. Scenario one is where they just cut him and release him outright, and then he would be subject to waivers. I think there's eight teams in the NFL that have enough cap space to sign him, so you need about $8.5-9 million. The Eagles are one of those. They could, but I have a hard time believing they would bring him in as a veteran wide receiver. And I think the second option is where they just bench him and he's just collecting a paycheck and they're not cutting him. Because if you look at it this way, if you cut him, let's say he goes like up to New England, and then New England, he scores a touchdown against them to beat them out for a playoff spot at some point. Like, I think that might be in Cleveland's head a little bit. So that situation is really like unprecedented. Like, the dad putting a video on social media about the quarterback not hitting me. I've never kind of seen anything like that before, but I wouldn't get your hopes up. If you want him in Philly, it's probably not gonna happen. I don't think that would be the move Howie would make
to bring him back. We've seen it in other Philly sports with Jahlil Okafor. So we've seen the Philly dads get involved. But real quick, I don't know what their cap situation is, but do the Raiders make any sense? I know that they obviously just lost a receiver. I don't know. They released him. I don't know if that changes their cap situation at all. But
Would make a lot of sense, but they don't have enough cap space to get him off waivers. They're not one of the eight teams that can. But again, if he does clear waivers, it's anyone's ball game. So he could go anywhere, and the Raiders would definitely be at the top of the list. I think they need to replace Henry Ruggs. That's true.
All right, quick Chargers Eagles prediction from you, and then plug where everyone can find you and read you.
So I think the Eagles are going to put up a fight. I don't think they're going to win this game. I think the Chargers are just a better team on paper, just from top to bottom. The Chargers are desperate for a win too. They've lost two in a row. They need a win against the Eagles here. I think the Eagles will put up a fight. I'm going 31-27 Chargers, and you can follow me at Brendan Deeg NFP, and you can check out my work at the National Football Post and Double Doink Podcast.
All right, thanks to the Six God, Brendan Deeg. Speaking of Sixers, what a segue that was. People won't know, but this took us like 10 minutes just to think of a segue out of that interview. Listen, did the Sixers just beat the Bulls minus three starters? Yup. Did they take their best shot from DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine? Yup. Did Embiid climb the ladder to meet DeMar DeRozan at the rim? Yup. Seth Curry, all-star? Yup. George Niang, sixth man of the year? Yup. Furkan Korkmaz going to furk around and make third team all defense? Yup. Maxi putting Lonzo Ball in a spin cycle? Yup. Your Philadelphia 76ers now have the most wins in the Eastern Conference?
Yup.
How the fuck did you not get, like...
I thought you were doing a little wait for yourself to say yup. I didn't know you were going to me yet.
How are we feeling, Mark Henry?
Oh, we are Sixered the fuck up. We went through the mud, the muck, the barbed wire. We're here. We're still here. I feel like we made it out of the barbed wire. We're still in it, but we're 6-2, and we're succeeding in the barbed wire. We're dancing around the barbed wire, getting around the mud. Our shoes are still bright white. I'm feeling good. I saw, I should give them credit. I saw someone write an article another day or two ago saying how the last two Sixers wins before last night's win were the most impressive back-to-back wins of the process era in the regular season.
I think he writes for Action Network.
No, I think he writes for Ricky Sanchez, actually. I think it might have been Mike O'Connor. I don't know who it was, but it was someone writing about that. Now, if that was the best back-to-back wins in the most impressive back-to-back wins in process history, then these are the most impressive three wins in a row in process history in the regular season. I mean, you go and you destroy the Hawks. You absolutely destroy the Hawks. You take that game personally. You act like, you know, you're still upset about last year's playoffs, which they should be. And they come out and destroy them. You get over that. You move on to the next game. Toby gets COVID. Joel sits out against Portland, and we win with 1/5 of our starting lineup against the Portland Trailblazers. And then without Tobias, obviously without Ben throughout this whole thing, with Joel Embiid not in MVP form yet. Absolutely not in MVP form. There was MVP chance at the Farg last night, but he has not been playing like an MVP so far yet. Given all of that information, we still beat the Bulls, and we're still 6-2. This is a team without Ben Simmons, a team that's missed Tobias for a quarter of their games so far this year, a team that's missed Joel for a quarter of their games so far this year, and he hasn't been fantastic in the six other ones. And this is still a team that's 6-2. And that's because of guys like Seth Curry, guys like Furkan Korkmaz. And above anything else, the thing that I think is like the number one story right now for the Sixers is this offseason. I mean, we podcasted throughout this whole offseason. And when the Sixers signed Niang, when the Sixers signed Drummond, and when the Sixers wouldn't trade Ben, and they didn't make any big moves, people were like, what a snore of an offseason. Daryl's not doing anything. You weren't as bad as some people, though. Like, some people were killing Daryl, and you understood that, like, I feel like you weren't killing him. I don't remember you killing him too badly. But we weren't, like, jumping over. I mean, we weren't, like, head over heels with the offseason, and not even I was. But they have been immeasurably huge. Georges Niang and Andre Drummond have been both just incredible pieces off the bench, and especially Niang. And actually, I didn't even think about it until you just said it, but it feels like he's not even having good games and he'll have like 18 points. Like there'll be like last night, I didn't think he was like excellent and he still ended up with 18 because he's just a willing 3-point shooter. And I hadn't thought about the sixth man of the year thing. It's not,
he's not on
crazy.
He's not on DraftKings or FanDuel. Like wow. Furkan's 70-1 right now. Like you can't just give Niang like an 85-1 ticket. There's not like there's not other guys that are 85-1. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
People forget he was a beast in college, Georges Niang. A beast at Iowa State.
He looks like great value, Klay Thompson, though. He does look like fat, Klay Thompson. Very bad body. Very, very Mac Jones's body.
That's fair.
No,
there's not a lot of definition
on those arms. Those arms are gross to look at. Like that guy looks like he would be running fours at half court fours at a Y.
And then Drummond, his first two possessions in the game, he finds like two insane passes, like two assists, like where he's standing at either like the free throw line or the 3-point line, or he threw it in there and started jogging back before the shot even went up. And he's like, I went to the game, so I had a different viewpoint on this type of stuff, but he's like, you know, like celebrating each assist like he just had like a 3-pointer. So I love that he's like takes more pride in his passing than like anything else in his game. I was trying to explain Andre Drummond to my girlfriend last night. Like when you're at the game with your girlfriend, you're like, oh, this is who this is, the new Sixers. And like she knows the people who have been on the team for a while, and tell her who the big players in the Bulls are. Try to give her like a little background. It's like, yeah, Andre Drummond, he dated Sam from iCarly. He was like a top 10 pick. He was thought to be like a star a couple of years ago in Detroit and like a rising center. Got really hairy shoulders. Very hairy shoulders. I think he's actually, maybe he's shaving that lately. It hasn't been as noticeable. I haven't noticed it. Maybe he's wearing underarm.
He's doing a lot of the sleeves.
I think that might be to cover up that shoulder hair. He got made fun of it on a couple podcasts. And it's been like a thing. I have a Pistons fan friend who used to talk about it a lot. But Andre Drummond, he's one of the weirdest players in the league. He's like the best offensive rebounder in like the last decade. He's probably like the second best big man passer in the league behind Nikola Jokic. Maybe Mason Plumlee, if you want to throw him in there. I don't think Plumlee's got as good of passing numbers as Drummond does. And he's like not a bad defender. He's definitely not a bad like
he's an upgrade from Dwight Howard.
It's just such a weird player. Like he's this guy who's a big man, but he could pass, and he's like it's just to have someone that good at a skill as he is at offensive rebounding, and to pay him the minimum and to be the backup who you are playing 15 plus minutes per game, it's an incredible value. I mean, Niang, Furkan, and Drummond all signed contracts this offseason. They all look like incredible values.
Are you and the girlfriend building another streak?
We're at one. We're what, 27? Or no, we're 28-1 now.
Got to 27 at one point?
Yeah, it was 27.
Phillies and Sixers.
We're still undefeated, Phillies.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to probably need to get you season tickets next year.
I didn't go for like the last month and a half of the season. I actually didn't go to a game after like August.
Maybe we'll get you a Sunday plan.
Grew up with a Sunday plan.
Oh, Sunday plan's the best. Well, 1 o'clock start, get out of there by 4, still have the whole day to yourselves. Oh,
fantastic.
Beautiful. What the ferk is up with Korkmaz? I legitimately think he could get some third team votes for all defense.
There's only two teams for defense. There's only two teams for defense. There's three teams for all NBA. They're going to make
my third team all defense. He's going to get votes for. We'll make a third team all defense at the end of the year, and Ferk will be on it. I was the biggest Ferk hater. I had a buddy who got his jersey last year. I just ridiculed him, made fun of him endlessly because like this guy is gone in the offseason. You get a Furkan jersey. You got a Furkan jersey, but you waited until him to get signed to get it. I just thought like people looked at those six games where I think Joel was out and they played like nobody. They played like Oklahoma City. They played like Minnesota, Sacramento. They played like nobody, and he was doing so well. People were like, see, Ferk's going to be big in the rotation in the playoffs. And I was like, no, he's not. And he really wasn't. Really wasn't in the playoffs too much. But I hand up, I am so happy to say this. Furkan Korkmaz has made me eat all the crow in the world.
So where Furkan has really improved, and I've got some stats here that I wanted to put up. Where Furkan's really improved, and I'd like to look at per 36 numbers to try to compare, you know, prior seasons to this one. I think you might have to pull it up. It's not letting me. There we go. Let me zoom in a little bit.
Once again, if there's anyone out here listening to this who would like to maybe be a producer on this, feel free to reach out to us.
Yeah, 100%. So, okay, there we go. I feel like that's the best I'm
getting. It looks good on my end.
So, if you look at his three-point attempts, you look at his three-point percentage, he's actually down this year. He was taking 9.1 threes per 36 last year on 37%. He's actually only taking 8 threes per game on 34%. But where you can really see the difference is over here in the assist column. He's averaging 5 assists per 36 as opposed to 2.8, 1.8, and 2.8, and 1.8. He alternated 1.8 and 2.8 year after year. Where you're really seeing the impact in his improvement is that being able to be a secondary ball handler on a team that doesn't really have a point guard right now. I mean, Maxey's a point guard, but we don't have that, you know, leader of the, we don't have a Chris Paul or a Ben Simmons, or not that Ben Simmons is even like a prototypical point guard in his own way, but we don't have someone leading the offense in the way that we have in the last couple of years or in the way that most teams do. So Furk has had to step up into that role, and that's been huge. And then where you're not seeing it show up on the stat sheet here, he's actually averaging less steals. He's a way better defender than he ever was before, to your point. I mean, he has really grown to kind of bothers some people. And To a lesser degree, I thought that Shake Milton in his couple minutes last night and his couple minutes so far this season has been really active defensively. And if you get this kind of improvement defensively from guys like Shake, guys like Furkan, if Seth Curry makes himself playable defensively, which I haven't noticed that he's been getting roasted outside of the Knicks game so far this year, even against the Nets, I didn't think he was getting killed. So I think these little improvements from these players who don't feel important, I think people kind of, and I'm not saying I wasn't doing this or I've never been guilty of this either, but I think people were saying that this championship window might be closed because Joel doesn't have that star with him, or Ben's not going to be the guy. Tobias can't be the second or third best guy. But my rebuttal to that was kind of always the Milwaukee Bucks. And they got all these little improvements from guys like, you know, Pat Connaughton and Brooke Lopez, mm-hmm. and these guys who stepped into roles, Bobby Portis, who really stepped into a big role there. Is Georges Niang our Bobby Portis without the fear of constant assault on teammates?
He's a wild man. I love Bobby Portis. Scared him, would be 15 arms lengths away from, wouldn't touch that guy with a 100-foot pole. Scary man.
The video of him shooting the three where the three's going down and his face is like, from the three-point line, it is unbelievable. Just an incredible face, like he was staring at the ball like, you better fucking go in. You don't want to know what happens if you don't go in. But I think that a lot of those small improvements from the fringe guys on the Bucks, Bryn Forbes, just like they got all these pieces that played together. And when Giannis took that next step in the playoffs, those pieces were able to supplement. And I think we're seeing that. And I think this is the deepest Sixers team of my lifetime. And I think if you add a CJ McCollum, or if you add whoever you want to say to this team, it's hard for me to say that we can't go really far again. I'm falling all the way back into.
You're
it's
in love.
Dangerous. I know. I'm head over heels. I really am. Like, I love this team. Love this team.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it's crazy. And I don't know how I didn't realize this today, but like, as I'm looking over the box score, I'm like, wait, where's Danny Green? Oh yeah, Danny Green's hurt. And like, oh wait, Tobias? Yeah. Oh fuck, Tobias is in health and safety protocols. Now, listen, it's always sometimes too good to be true. You know, it's now they're throwing something else. It's not always sunny in Philadelphia. Now they're throwing COVID in the mix. Isaiah Joe, right before we got on this podcast, test positive, or he's in health and safety protocols. Maybe it was a close contact to Tobias Harris. I know they're still looking at that. Now they're testing the whole team out of precautionary reasons. It could be the first game that's canceled due to COVID in over a year now. So obviously, or we could do the whole situation where we played against seven guys with the Timberwolves last year. So of course, you know, when everything starts to go well, obviously the basketball gods throw something like a ball bouncing four times on a rim and going in. And they also throw COVID at us, and they also throw a contract situation of a guy who wants to get traded with 4 years left on his deal. But you know what? Like Rocky said, you get hit, you keep going. That's how winners are made. How about fourth quarter Ferk? Have you seen this guy? Fourth quarter Ferk? Like everybody drew it up. Among all NBA players this season thus far, Furkan Korkmaz, third in fourth quarter points with 51. He trails only DeMar DeRozan and Fred VanVleet. Furkan Korkmaz, the clutchest sixer of the season so far.
He looked incredible in those Spectrum jerseys, by the way, last night. And by the way, has there ever been anything as universally loved in Philadelphia as the Spectrum jerseys?
I've only seen one person with any notoriety that has said they weren't good.
Who didn't like him?
I think Sam Wilson.
I don't know who that is.
Well, but so doesn't mean anything to you.
So, yeah, everyone. It seems like they're not my favorites. I actually like the Gray Stars Rocky jersey. I love that jersey. And then I like the white.
Go ahead. What?
The white version of the gray jersey, too.
I liked the 76ers, like the 1970 look. I also liked the cream ones. The cream ones were nice.
I like those too. The one that they did the photo shoot with the car with Joel and Ben that they photoshopped, and that was a big that was a big drama whether or not they got together to take the picture or whether or not they took the picture separately, and you found out that
we're psychopaths.
Isn't that
we're
so funny? You think
it was like, photoshopped in?
Yeah, it was. You think about like those storylines and like that you think about constantly 3 years ago. Like that was something I was spending actual like brain power on, whether or not Joel and Ben were friendly enough to get together to do a photo shoot.
I mean, I'm the same way, but we're such a psychotic fan base. It is insane. The Photoshop of all this.
But anyway, Furkan in those jerseys.
He's a beautiful guy.
I mean, he really is. I mean, those jerseys they were very complimentary to some of our players. I thought Seth looked like a baller out there last night. He was feeling good in the jerseys.
Furkan does look like he will sell me drugs with his new hairstyle. I don't know if it's a perm.
I love it.
I don't know if it's a lot of hair gel, but it's got a lot of bounce. It's got a lot of fructis in there.
Never cut it off.
No, his confidence grew with his hair. Okay, let's talk about him real quick because I don't really want to mention him because there's such a good team right now without him that it kind of just feels dirty to kind of mention Ben Simmons because they're playing so well and they've kind of shown that like they don't necessarily need him. But if you're Ben Simmons and you're watching at home and there's no chance he's watching at home.
Yeah, he is.
You think so?
Yeah, 100%.
You don't think he's running quads in Verdansk right now?
He's in his
COD bunker, his video game bunker.
Nah, I think he's watching the Sixers. I think he's upset they're succeeding.
Okay, fine. Then if he is watching them, how does he not want to play on this team? Like he doesn't even need to be relied on to score on this team.
He's going to make this team worse if he plays because just point blank, we'd be a worse team with Ben Simmons right now if he was on the court because Andre Drummond alone. We saw the problems with Ben and Dwight lineups last year, and that really tanked our bench lineups and any lineups that had Joel not in the game. We had bigger splits last year from Joel on off than we did in the regular season the year that we had Greg Monroe and Boban and Amir Johnson as his backups. So that was because of Ben's lack of development as a player and his lack of ability to fit with guys like Matisse and guys like Dwight. And those lineups killed us last year. They really did. And Doc went right to them again in the playoffs. So I truly think that we would be a worse team as currently constructed if Ben Simmons was playing basketball than we are right now. And this is, by the way, this isn't like us starting 6-2. There's been some circumstances around it that have made it a little bit more shocking. Like I laid out with that 3-game win streak that I just talked about, like what has made it so impressive. But I think I did say on this podcast that I was pretty sure that this team was going to start like 14-4 without Ben Simmons or like 10-2 without Ben Simmons. And it was going to be like this team is just so fun. And this team is it's so scrappy and they win games. And that's exactly what's happening. I feel like I kind of put like handicapped that to a T, and people that really thought this team was going to be a play-in team, I don't see how that's happening now. I mean, with the fact that we've dealt with the Ben situation so far already this year. So if we don't get anything from Ben, that doesn't change anything from the fact that let's say we keep him the whole year and don't trade him. We're 6-2 without him right now.
And Tobias. Title.
Yeah. Tobias, he's going to come back at some point. I should mention like Doc does seem to think that, you know, he's sick, I guess. Like he's legitimately sick with COVID. So that's horrible. Yeah. That's horrible. And he's vaccinated too, so it makes you feel horrible for him. And you hope that, you know, you hope he doesn't have any long-term effects, and you hope that he's all right to be running up and down a basketball floor. And who knows with Tobias, no matter what problems are complaints I ever have about Tobias Harris. He's like, seems like the best guy in basketball, maybe. Like, so it couldn't happen to a worse guy or a better guy, I should say. So I mean, we've had so many issues already and we're 6-2. So you have to think, like, I think any notion that this team could not be a top six Eastern Conference playoff team, I think that's dead right now. I think you're a 50-plus win team if you have Joel Embiid on your team. And even if Joel Embiid's not full MVP powers, Joel Embiid, I just think that this team's deep enough and we have the star that we have a floor. Do we have a ceiling? That's a different conversation.
Is it sustainable is what I want to know.
Yeah.
This.
Yeah.
How sustainable? Like, are we talking like top five in the East? Are we talking top three in the East?
So,
how sustainable?
Everyone's
healthy.
Question. I think
could be besides Ben.
Top four. It could be top four, but I think Milwaukee will eventually, I don't know what the standings actually even look like right now. I think Milwaukee will eventually be the number one seed.
They would miss the playoffs right now. I'm pretty sure they're like 10th or 11th.
I guess it's not sustainable in the way that 75% means you win 61 and a half games. So that's like an insane year. I predicted them to win 52 games. I think right now you'd have to say, you know, maybe around 54, maybe around 55.
Right now the top eight are Heat, Sixers, Bulls, Raptors, Nets, Knicks, Wizards, Cavs. The Wizards, Cavs, are they going to be there?
Cavs will be.
Yeah. You like the tall Cavs, the showers or the growers, yeah. Not showers.
I like it. I like that nickname too. I think they'll be in the play-in. I'm pretty confident they'll be in the play-in. Wizards, yeah, so no.
Bucks, Nets, Hawks, Bucks. Celtics, Pacers, all 10, 11, 12, 13. That's going to change up.
Yeah. I mean, the Nets, Bucks, Hawks are all definitely going to be the top six teams, I think. And same with the Sixers. I think Nets, Bucks, Hawks, Sixers, Heat will be the top five in some order.
You're worried about the Celtics already having player meetings that supposedly like didn't conquer anything.
Yeah, well, they barely beat
players only meetings. They're saying players only meetings, and they didn't come to agreement on anything. It was a waste of a player meeting.
Boj was like, "Yeah, it wasn't very productive." He actually like kind of like laughed at himself when he said it. My buddy Woj, great sense of humor.
Yeah. Did you see the dickhead shirts? The outside vendors at Wells Fargo right now, whether it's a Flyers game, whether it's an Eagles game, or whether it's a Sixers game, they're just throwing high 90s on the black right now.
Yeah.
I love the creativity. Don't get me wrong. But like, you're a psychopath if you just wear someone's head with connected to chin balls on your chest.
I didn't see anyone wearing it.
Could you imagine like going to, I don't know, family dinner and forgetting you have your Ben Simmons dickhead shirt on? You take your jacket off. Grandma's having a fucking stroke because she sees these hairy balls right in your gazpacho. Like,
the shirt vendors outside of the Wells Fargo Center, the Link, or the Citizens Bank Park. Cancel culture doesn't extend to them, I guess.
The Mr. Softy one. They had the milk carton one. Yeah, the milk carton, the Mr. Softy one. I would have just loved to see the marketing meeting that the vendors had on Broad and Patterson when they were like, hey, listen, Ben Simmons' head as the penis head. And then these hairy balls on his chin. And who, I wonder if there's a guy that like signs off on it. Cause usually they just rip everybody's idea and then just goes prints it. This one is an original. So this one actually could go, this one could be an NFT. This one could go for a lot on eBay one day.
Speaking of NFTs,
that's a fucking awesome segue, Mark. So the Sixers are giving away old games from the Spectrum in NFT form now. So they did it. I love Zoomoff getting in on this. Guy's retired and like, hey, do you mind, you know,
commemorative ticket drops this season?
Do you mind coming back a little bit?
Hey, do you mind coming calling the Sixers games again?
On October 18th, 1967, the defending champion 76ers played their first game at the Philadelphia Spectrum.
Cool. So the Sixers are auctioning off, or you can buy an NFT. I know we own one right now, but I'm still kind of, you know, I still don't understand them all the way.
Do you have buyer's remorse?
No. The crypto shark is the reason why they're 6-2. They're 3-0 since we bought the crypto shark.
Wow. Did you save the Sixer season?
That or Jonah Bolden. But anyway, so they're giving away NFTs for the first game ever that you can now buy. So me and Mark wanted to do, what games would we NFT that we would buy on? Do you have any in your mind?
Yeah, oh, I've got plenty in my mind. But I mean, the obvious one that everyone will say is like Joel's first game against Oklahoma City. That was amazing. Yes. He hit that three and then he dunks on Russ, and that started the whole funny him and Russ back and forth. That's probably the one that first comes to my brain. You got one for me?
Corey Brewer, James Harden game. I don't know why, but one incredible. Of my favorite games ever. I know exactly where I was when I watched it. And I just remember the Corey Brewer offensive foul where he just totally like kind of flopped and just laid on the ground. And he just put James Harden in a torture chamber. One of my favorite games ever.
No, that was incredible. The whole Corey Brewer experience, the fact that was only like a 2-week thing, felt like it went on for 3 months. Like I Corey Brewer is a forever Sixer to me.
I'm almost positive Corey Brewer could be like Tony Allen. He could just strap on a pair of sneakers right now and give me like 10 minutes against the best team's offense.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
How about the MCW game? First game of the year. Build his Rookie of the Year campaign against the Miami Heat, coming fresh off of a championship game. We're told that this is going to be a process. You know, the process might take some years. And then MCW almost has a quadruple double, and we're like, "Fuck your process." We found our next franchise player.
No, that was legendary. I'll go with the game that was 8 games later than that. I believe maybe it might have been the next year. Actually, I can't remember. Was MCW 2012? Let's check it out real quick. While I'm on it.
No, because he wasn't on that.
No, yeah. This was eight games later. So game 9 of the 2013 season. MCW had to sit out. Unfortunately, Kwame Brown did too. Kwame Brown got a DNP here. But this was a double overtime game only single overtime. I thought that went double. It was a single overtime game with the Houston Rockets, who at the time were starting Patrick Beverley, Jeremy Lin, Terrence Jones, Chandler Parsons, and Dwight Howard. And this was also, I believe, the Sixers, in conjunction with Jeremy Lin coming, did like Asian American Heritage Night. And I didn't realize how big of a deal Jeremy Lin was outside of New York until that game, because there were more Jeremy Lin fans than Sixers fans at that game. I know it was the process era, but there were probably like 3,000 Jeremy Lin fans and then like 2,000 Sixers fans at that point. But this was a game in which Tony Roten became the first player ever to triple-double in their first game with an 18, 11, and 10. And I believe that James Anderson dropped 36 in this game. We got the win, 123-117. We went to 5-4 on the season.
Free Tony Roten. Game 4 Celtics, 2012 playoffs, where we took them to 7. I was at that game, last row of the Wells Fargo Center, just screaming my head off. One of the best games I've ever been to this day. The fact that that team took the Celtics to 7, we should have got commemorative rings or hung a banner from that. That was a team that had no business being on the same court as the Celtics after beating a Derrick Roseless Bulls in the first round.
Yeah, I just that era is like ugh to me. Like even the fun parts of the era, like the Heat series, the Lou Will shot, that era is just like ugh. You couldn't pay me to take an NFT from the Doug Collins era.
But stadium was an animal house.
By the way, the Frosty freeze out last night was like all time at one point. Like it felt like wilder than it felt in the playoffs. I don't know if people just like are excited to get back out there to the Frosty freeze out, but the stadium was kind of quiet all game actually until the third or until they do it in the third or the fourth. I can't remember anymore. They started in the third, right?
Yeah. Started in the third.
Yeah. They started in the third when the first Frosty freeze out, it went from like the stadium was kind of dead all game to just like, holy shit, this is insanity. Like, and I was just thinking about like being a Chicago Bull, like being Alex Caruso. Like, you probably haven't been to like the Sixers games enough to like know that this is a thing. Like, you're probably like standing there like, what is going on? Like, they are losing their minds at a free throw for the Bulls. Like, it's just like people must think that is so insane.
I mean, remember the Isaiah Thomas thing? I just wanted a Frosty. The guy's like cursing at him all game. Isaiah Thomas runs up to the stands. He's like, what did he say to you? He's like, he said he just wanted a Frosty. Like one of the all-time Like the Frosty freeze out has become one of the best things about the Sixers games.
What a marketing campaign by Wendy's. And to get the Frosty involved in this, Frosty freeze out is like, yeah, it's one of the biggest parts of going to the Sixers game. You get the bell ringer, you get the Frosty freeze out, you get the song, hopefully at the end of the game. Those are pillars of the Sixers experience.
Were you or anyone you know ever the small fry of the game?
Absolutely not. I'm not. You think I'm worthy of that?
Kid next to me was small fry of the game one time when I was like 7 years old and I was pissed.
I did get brought onto Citizens Bank Park to meet Jimmy Rollins in like 2005 or 2006, I believe. No, it might have been 2004, actually. I think it was the first year at the bank on Sunday games. Again, we talked about my Sunday plan earlier. When I had a Sunday plan when I was a kid, they used to bring out like a team of kids for each position. At the time, I wanted to meet Pat Burrell. Ended up meeting Jimmy Rollins, and then he became like my favorite player then on. It's kind of funny. Like, I'm very happy I met Jimmy Rollins instead of Pat Burrell now.
I tried to get a ball from Pat Burrell one time, so I was going down because I had the first year we had left field seats, 15 rows up, and I would go down to the fence part and try to get Pat to give me a ball. Didn't work for like seven innings. Then I brought my friend's hot mom down with me. Then he looked at me, didn't get a ball. Story? It's a real story. Oh yeah, yeah. My friend's hot mom, because I think my dad was there and my friend's hot mom's husband was there, and like, bring Liz. So we brought Liz down. He looked at me, didn't get a ball because the center fielder had it, waited too long. Should have brought her down in like the third inning.
Have you ever seen the He Burrowed Your Girl video?
Oh, He Burrowed Your Girl is one of the classic 1.0 YouTube videos.
It's all time. It really is an all time video. Pat Burrell. I have a friend who, like, Pat Burrell's his favorite Philadelphia athlete of all time. And he sends me that video like once every couple months, just being like, just making sure you don't forget about the legend of Pat Burrell.
Oh, the machine?
It's unbelievable. I was a big Pat Burrell guy. It's actually like kind of funny. Pat Burrell has definitely been put in to the category of like pre that era of Phillies. I feel like a lot of people forget that he was on the World Series team. So he was still technically like a part of that era in 07 and 08. I feel like people have kind of like, he's become Bobby Abreu, Pat Burrell, Jim Thome. Like those guys are like the era before that.
Never had a signature moment. His signature moment is him like doing curls.
No, he had the double off the wall and the resumption.
But there were so many signature moments that year.
Yeah,
I mean, you would say Brett Myers against CC Sabathia like was more of a signature moment than.
You know what's funny? Like the only person who didn't really have a signature moment in the 08 playoffs, I could be wrong. Maybe I'm forgetting one. Is Jimmy Rollins, right? He doesn't really have that like one moment. He had an 09 against the Dodgers, the walk off against the Dodgers. He doesn't have that one. The moment I would think of for Jimmy Rollins from 08 is I think it's 08, might be 07, when he stopped the ball from going up the middle and got the double play to force. To win the division, that would have been the right.
I can't really think about that, but yeah, definitely in the playoffs. Like in the playoffs, nothing like rings a bell like right off the top of my head. But there were so many signature moments in that 08 run, and obviously because we're just from Philly, like I'm sure Braves fans are like, yeah, this was a signature moment.
I
feel like there were so many big moments between stairs, between Utley faking that throw going home,
Utley leading off the World Series with a homer.
Was the get me to the plate? Was that 08? Was that Ryan Howard 08 or was that? That might have been 09 or 10.
I don't know. I think it was 09, actually. Oh, no. I don't know.
Maybe to the plate might have been 08, but I forget. And they all run that. Those 4 years run together. 07 to 11 run together. All right. We got any more NFTs? We got to get into picks.
NFTs. I'm trying to think any games that are slipping my brain. Oh, what did Joel drop against the Lakers the one game?
Oh, last year? When LeBron pushed him out of the air?
No. I think this was a couple games ago.
The Joel Embiid 50 game against the Bulls last year was great. The Jimmy game, the Hornets, the game winner, that's a good one. The T.J. McConnell game when they beat the Knicks.
I can't believe I didn't. I was at that game. I can't believe I didn't say
I can't
that.
Believe Carmelo Anthony didn't choke out. Who was the coach at that time?
I don't know.
They like hated each
Woodson?
Other.
Woodson? That'd have been Woodson?
It might have been Woodson, or it might have been right after Woodson. So many good memories. No matter what, the process will always be one of my favorite.
I'm trying to find it. Yeah. November 2017 at the Lakers, he had 46, 15, 7 assists, and 7 blocks. I remember watching that game when he dropped 46, and that was still young Embiid, and that was still like, what do we really even like have here? I think that would have been the first year we made the playoffs. And it was November, so it was early in the season. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like, this might be, like, a completely different thing than I thought we were even getting. Like, I had talked myself into Embiid at that point after the 31-game season and how good he was then. But I remember watching that Lakers game in college and just being like, oh, my God. Like, we might have the best player in the world. Like, this guy is incredible. Like,
all right, if you are listening to this, tweet us any of your games from any era. Probably more of the process era, or maybe the last 10 years, that you would NFT if you got the chance at Everything's Fine, EVRY, Things Fine. All right, let's get into picks. Records for me?
17-9 for me, 9-17 for you.
Jesus. Actually, that's not bad. I think I've always hovered around 7, 8, 9 games back.
So yeah, you're in striking distance.
I'm consistent. We're on week 9. We just hit the midway point. I'm happy with where I'm at. I'm sure you're happy where you're at. I mean, I am going up against a professional gambler. I will muck it up a lot more. I have not mucked it up this week. I'll be fair to you. I will start it off. I love this pick. Browns plus 2.5. They want you to believe there's turmoil in the Browns organization, but losing OBJ doesn't really mean anything because he wasn't there all year, as you could see by his dad's 11-minute video of Baker Mayfield missing him. The Browns defensive line is going to eat the shit out of the Bengals offensive line. They have the highest pass win rate. Yes, pass win rate of a defensive line and the highest pass win rate of an offensive line. I like the Browns. I like the Browns in this one. In a Baker Mayfield might take an Odell flag and plant it at the 50-yard line.
You want to know how good of a guy I am?
You're going to give that to me?
I have that on my list, and I'm not going to use it. I'm not going to do that to you. I'm going to keep it off. I'm going to keep it off. I won't try to muddy up your chances at getting back in the race. I'll leave the Browns off. I'll start with Monday Night Football. Why not? Ooh, it seems like weird to start with Monday Night Football, but I'll go with Bears plus 7 at the Steelers. The Steelers are the worst favorite like ever. They just don't cover when favored. They're a great underdog, bad favorite. That's the story of Mike Tomlin's life. I wish I had the stats here, but I just simply don't. So
so just take what I'm saying.
So just take my word for it. You're definitely not. Are you a Seinfeld guy?
A little bit.
The movie phone when Kramer's like he's pretending to be movie phone and press 1 if you'd like to listen to this, and he can't tell what they're pressing. He goes, "Why don't you just tell me what type of movie you'd like to see?" That's kind of what I'm doing here, not having the stats. But oh man, timeout. Pause. I have the stats. I found the stats. I've uncovered them under a stone. And it's when Tomlin is favored by more than a field goal, he is 54-69-1 against the spread. That is a bad percentage with a team that's been very good over the years. And this Steelers team is not very good. And it seems like Justin Fields unlocked his mojo a little bit last week. Now I think Matt Nagy's coming back. That could completely throw the mojo off. Not good.
Yeah.
Stay at home, Matt Nagy. Get better. You know,
can't ever be fired if he stays at home with COVID.
He should just be like, "Yeah, I'm really sick. Like, I'm not coming back." Like, that should be the Matt Nagy move. But I'm gonna rock with the Bears. I'm gonna rock with the Bears here as a touchdown underdog. It's more of a bet against the Steelers than it is on the Bears, which is always dangerous. But the Steelers should not be a 7-point favorite against anyone other than like the Texans, Jets, Giants, like the real bottom tier teams.
My next one, speaking of the Texans plus 6.5. T-Mobile's back. If you listen to the Brennan Deague interview, you'll know that T-Mobile's back. That was breaking news during the interview. Just two bad teams, Texans, Dolphins. So I would just take the points when I have two bad teams. I like that T-Mobile's back.
I, again, was going to use that, but I won't. I also got it at 7.5 earlier on in the week just because I was like, ooh, if Tyrod plays, this is going to go down. I think it's actually even at 5.5 now, but I'll give you 6.5. I'll give you 7.5 if you want it. But
I'd like to take 7.5.
I'll give you 7.5. You can take it. Just because I have it too. It was a small play, but just because I was nervous that if Tyrod didn't play, that it would be a bet on Davis Mills. But I like that play a lot. I'm gonna go with Patriots -3. I feel like this is like the fourth straight week I've picked the Patriots. I feel like, or at least it's like the fifth straight week I've picked a game involving the Patriots. I think I picked the Cowboys against them. So I've been all over the Patriots this year. I think I've been right like every way on them, actually. I think I bet on almost all their games and got them almost all correct. And I like them here again. You're going to tell me that the guy who saw ghosts, Sam Darnold, against the New England Patriots is going to just somehow miraculously play it good? He's Sam Darnold. He stinks. He beat the Falcons last week, and he was not very good in that game. That was not a game that you watch and you're like, oh, Sam Darnold's fixed all the problems from the last couple weeks. You know, we're back on track. I know McCaffrey's playing, probably. It looks like he's playing. I don't care. New England wins that game, and they cover minus three.
Are you worried about P.J. Walker potentially playing? Him and Matt Rhule dialing up some Temple Magic?
Absolutely not. That guy is so bad, though. I know you're a fan of P.J. Walker. They put
him
in.
It's an XFL MVP.
They put him in for the one game. What did he go, like 3 for 16?
Like, he was off the bench cold.
But that's wild. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen like 3 for 16 out of a quarterback.
A week of reps. He's got a week of reps now. You've definitely seen 3 for 16 from a quarterback. It's a backup quarterback who was cold, who was holding a clipboard, who had no time to prepare for what he was going to see. Show some respect for the Power Six.
Hey, I already showed respect to the Power Six. Cincinnati should be in the top three. The college football playoffs screwed him.
All right. This is an ultimate revenge pick for me. Jaguars +14.5. Now, the Manning cast curse. If you don't know about this, active players who have joined the Manning cast are 0-3 when they play their next game. Matt Stafford, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson. The Manning cast cuts into watching film. And I'm also getting revenge for Texans +16.5 in week 4 that I bet on the Texans and the Bills ended up winning 44-0. I'm coming back.
You love it.
I do. Urban Meyer can't be this bad.
I thought that last week when I bet on them last week.
Urban Meyer can't be this bad.
It wasn't fun. Let me just tell you, like, let me let you into how your Sunday is going to be if you bet on the Jaguars. It's not going to be fun. Because I bet on them last Sunday, and it was over within minutes. Like, that game was 17-0 with, like, 5 minutes left in the first. Geno looked like Peyton Manning out there. It was unbelievable. The Jags are just, ugh.
It's hard to travel to Jacksonville.
Duval.
It's hard to travel to Jacksonville. It's hard to travel.
I feel you. I hear you. Humidity. I'm gonna ride with Brendan Deague. I'm going to go with the Arizona Cardinals. He says it seems like Kyler's going to play. I feel like I haven't been keeping up on that news close enough. I haven't made this bet yet. I liked it at -2.5 when it opened. When I thought Kyler was playing and whatever, I thought he was banged up. Now that it's up in the air, it's down to -1. No matter what, I like Arizona to win this game if Kyler plays. I'm thinking about, like, maybe if Kyler doesn't play, I'm going to hop on with you with the Texans as like my third play. But I think Kyler is going to play. So I don't have another one.
All right, we'll get another one by Sunday. And then
college? Can I use a college?
No, alternate? You're 17-9. Stop mucking it up.
That's fair. But I'll say Arizona, contingent on what's going on with Kyler Murray. Of course, it's a 4 o'clock game, but I'll say Arizona is my third pick. So I went with the Bears, the Patriots, and the Cardinals, and you went with the Browns, the Texans, and the Jaguars.
All dogs, baby.
Smelling like an underdog weekend.
All dogs go to heaven, baby.
I went one dog and two faves.
All right. Well, that's the podcast. Thanks, as always, for listening. Rate, review, subscribe on wherever you get podcasts to listen to. Tell a friend. Be a friend. Tell a friend. Tell a friend to then tell another friend. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, blah, 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 blah. Most importantly, follow us on YouTube, subscribe. We'll build this out. We'll get it better. Go Sixers. Hope everyone's safe. Bye.